everyone. So you're about to listen to a brand new episode about unbuilt Walt Disney World resorts, as well as my trip report to Walt Disney Studios. Now, before we get into that, there's something we need to talk about. And it's the fact that, much to my chagrin, the microphone that was recorded in this episode, unbeknownst to us, was not my traditional mic. It was my laptop mic. And I got it back, I heard it, and my heart broke in two. And you'll probably hear a little bit why, but I thought this episode was excellent. This is one of my favorite episodes we've ever done. So while the recording on my half, now Dorman's half perfect, he's golden. My half is going to be very echoey and reverby. We tried doing all the best to minimize that, but you could only do so much. My half is going to be not the quality that I usually want. So I sincerely apologize about that, but it is still an amazing episode and lots of fun discussion. So my apologies about that. Let's get on with the episode.
Now suppose Mom and Dad want a game of golf. Two championship courses with lots of water hazards to test their every shot. Perhaps lunch on the way at the new Disney-designed and Disney-managed Asian Hotel. The Polynesian Hotel will carry one to the South Pacific and even supply a coral reef where one may dive for pearls. All of these new hotels will be managed and run as a working part of Walt Disney World. This one is a bit of Venice and St. Mark's Square. Venetian throughout in design and decor. This one will be a vision out of the Arabian Nights, the Persian Hotel, a veritable palace in the hotel keeper's art. For simpler tastes, there will be the Trailer Park Campground, a small-scale city in itself. And along with it, the Diamond D Dude Ranch, where a small-sized cowpoke meets large-sized horse. Who cares about girls? Unless it might be this one.
Of all ages to another episode of Unbuilt, an Unrealized Theme Park Podcast. With me today, as always, is my co-host Ryan Dorman. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I you threw me to the dogs to put me on Jalen's show to have me be interviewed and pressed up against the wall over the live action Disney movies, but I seem like I made out of it unscathed. I was pretty
beaten and tarred and feathered. What was worse, being in that podcast or having to watch the live action films?
Oh, without a doubt, the live action movies. The podcast was excellent. I mean, it was being put on trial, maybe not my favorite thing, but
yeah.
I think having to watch the live action movies, there are very few experiences more insufferable than The Little Mermaid 2023.
It's mostly just boring. As long as I could get a good laugh out of Javier Bardem's insanely boring performance. He does not want to be there at all.
No, the money paid well.
Yes.
Yeah, it was a good investment.
Well, the check cleared, clearly. they might not have filmed that movie, but they certainly planned that movie at the place where I got to go last week. I got to do through D23, the Walt Disney Studios tour. Now, of course, you're looking at this podcast right now, and you're seeing that this is an episode about unbuilt Walt Disney World hotels. Don't worry. We're going to get to that, and I'll try to make this as brief as possible. But I do want to talk about this experience as much as I can. Now, I've never been to the Walt Disney Studios. It is Well, let's start it on this. Have you ever done any studio tours of any kind at all? Or
I don't think so. Now that I think about it, I don't believe so. I've lived vicariously through other people's visits to the Walt Disney Studios, but not myself. I've never actually done it.
Now, there's, you know, they have the Universal Studios train tour and the Warner Brothers tour. I believe there's a Paramount Pictures tour. At least there used to be. I'm not sure if there still is. I've never been on that one. But I have done Warner Brothers, Universal. I've also walked on both lots before when, you know, I used to live in LA and when I used to be Universal. I've never been to Walt Disney Studios. And it's one they don't usually have tours at all. And this one you have to pay $150 for. It's $150 on D23. They're very limited. Each tour, there's a tour that goes every half hour on certain days. And they, I believe it's a limit of like 10 people at most. And they're very strict about this too. Like, because parking is limited and like you go in and, have you ever seen any photos of it before? I mean, have you seen Saving Mr. Banks? I guess.
Yes,
you
know, of course. Yeah. There's an extent of a studio tour. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the original studio that Walt bought with the proceeds, from Snow White and Seven Dwarfs. So it is very historical and very well manicured. There's a lot of history in the Universal Studios lot. However, the Universal Studios lot has been burned many times and has been changed many times. The old Astounding stage there, Stage 28, was demolished. Now it's Super Nintendo World. And they clearly, they care more about being a theme park a little bit more than filming stuff there. But Walt Disney Studios, it definitely is the most manicured place. So you go in and I have the thread for it open. So in case you're ever thinking about doing this, number one, you cannot be there more than a half hour before. And I mean, if you are there, like at my tour was at 2. So if you're there at 1:29, they won't let you on the lot. You have to be there right on the dime, and then you go you go to your right into a pretty smallish surface parking lot, and you can see across the way is the Roy E. Disney Animation Building. Mostly next to you is this, you know, studio. It's a smallish studio, and there are about 6-ish sound stages, and most of it is the very, very nice manicured green lush front lot. That's the bulk of it. So you go, there's the studio store, which is smaller than you'd think. The front half is basically a Disney store. And then the back, there's a little back nook that has a bunch of Disney employee merchandise that you can still buy. I'm actually right now wearing a Walt Disney Studios shirt that I bought there. And so you get to go in there, and then to your left is where the commissary is, which is the same commissary that they've had since the like late 30s, early 40s, which is pretty cool. Obviously, it's all been updated. Then you get your tour guide, and the tour guide pretty much takes you on a walking tour through the entire studio. You get to go to Pluto's Corner, which is that famous, you know, sign there that they had in the Reluctant Dragon. You can, I believe, see that also in Saving Mr. Banks. I got to take my photo with it. That was pretty cool. And then they take you into the famous animation building, which is a bunch of production bungalows right now. Because of course they, you know, kicked everybody out so that Bette Midler had a place to have her dressing room on the lot. And they kicked a bunch of the animation people out, put them in RVs and stuff like that, and a trailer park. And what was interesting is, the tour guide was actually really forthcoming with this knowledge. Like, she will like say it, this is what happened. And then we have the animation renaissance. And so they're comfortable in talking about, you know, bad times of Mikey Eisner, but I don't think they're going to talk about bad times with Bob Chapek or anything recent.
But at the very least, when you go into the old animation building, there is three hallways. It's three stories tall. And you get to go down the hallway, and the hallways are like actually themed to its history. The one thing you can't take a photo of is the production offices. So there's like a directory, and it has all of the people there that are working there. And the reason why is because there's actually some pretty famous people on that directory. Now, I couldn't take a photo of it, but I could tell you who some of the people were. I do know that Jonathan Groff has an office there. Who else? There's also Alec Berg has some offices there. So that was interesting to see, like, the kind of whose names.
What does Jonathan Groff do in his office?
I don't produce stuff. I don't know. He's currently on Broadway right now. I don't know what he's doing there. Maybe if he needs a place between Frozen 3 recording sessions to chill, maybe. I don't know. You know, it's such a hard day being Kristoff.
It seems like more of an advertisement than it does an actual.
Yeah.
Although maybe he's an incredibly busy paperwork puncher.
But yeah.
I could just be completely wrong here.
Right. But the first floor is dedicated to the art of Disney's animation. And there's original storyboards on there. You have production art from all the movies. You know, you have production art from Aladdin, where the genie looked completely different, and background art from The Little Mermaid. And then the most interesting part was, you couldn't touch the paper, but they actually had loose leaf, rough Glen Keane drawings from Beauty and the Beast of the Beast, and the cleanup animation drawings, which was really cool. In addition, they had photo cells and, you know, other art pieces, which was really cool. You go up to the second floor, and it's all posters of films that Walt Disney made in his lifetime. So that's the second floor. So you go down the second floor, and it's dotted with posters from Walt Disney's lifetime. Then you get to see where the old screening room is. And that's technically not the sweat box, because the sweat box is actually on the Hyperion Avenue. One of the funniest things that I saw was at the end of the hallway, there's a photo of Walt Disney, and it's framed with the theater that just recently hosted the Bluey special. For some reason, this looks like the meeting of Walt Disney and Bluey, a property that he is not allowed to own because Australia owns it and they won't give it up. But the third floor you go to, and that is filled with photos from Walt's life, including a photo of him. I'm not sure if you're looking at this thread along with me, but there's a photo of Walt and a bunch of Mickey dolls, which is really horrifying. The tour guide pointed out there's this one Mickey who looks like he's had too much coffee. It's the one on the lower right-hand corner, and his eyes are all bugging out. It's really something. The next thing, you get to go to a prop corner, which she said was installed last week. So that would have been 2 weeks ago. It was installed last week. We were some of the first tours to ever see it. They had props and displays from mostly Disney Plus stuff, Disney Plus and Hulu stuff, like the Chippendales Rescue Rangers movie, and Prey on Hulu, and Quiz Lady and Peter Pan and Wendy, which, I mean, I really didn't care for. I liked seeing the Chippendale stuff, but really didn't care for those, but it was just kind of really a random assortment of props on display. But anyways, you go further, and of course there's photos of Walt about Disneyland, goes through that, and of course they had a wonderful color photo of Walt Disney and Rolly Crump, rest in peace. And finally, you get at the end where it shows Walt in front of the big Epcot map and pointing to the center of Florida as he was presenting Project Florida. The next thing you do is you turn a corner and you're faced with, it says Walt Disney Archives, and this is Walt's office. So now you get to go into Walt's office. So you first go into it's the first secretary. He had two secretaries. You go into the first secretary's office, and this is where you get to put your bags away. You have to put all your bags away. You can't have any backpacks or any loose articles except for your phones in Walt's office. The next thing is you go into a second secretary's office. Oh, it's so confusing. And it's still done up completely like it was. There's like a foam rubber padding underneath you as you walk. So you're not allowed to walk on the actual carpet. Now, Walt's office, this is the original office space, but it's not technically the original offices because they had to put it all back together. Dave Smith, the archivist, he cataloged everything. And then after executives were done with it, I guess like in the early 2000s, they put it all back together. And the only thing they've done with it besides tours is they filmed a few things in there. And that's it. You watch a little movie about it, and then you go into his office. And his office is, I mean, it's smallish, but I mean, it's neat. It's very interesting to see all the books he had on display. And of course, the piano that only Richard Sherman can play on. If you touch those keyboards, I think the Disney snipers would shoot you on sight. The Annette Funicello, her audition song is on there for some reason. And songbook Blue Poke Bonnet and a Stovepipe Hat. There's also a Mouser and a Duckster, whatever they used to call it, the little awards that Roy Disney would give out. And then there's a little bird, the original bird automaton that Walt bought on vacation and inspired him to do audio animatronics is in this room. And then you go into his working office. So he has like three rooms. He has his professional office, his working office. And in the working office, they have a giant map of Epcot and Air Force One and, well, the original, the actual plane, not the hot air balloon. And a map of Disneyland's expansion. I think on there it's like... It says, oh, this is where the Haunted Mansion will go, home of 1,001 ghosts. And apparently, I mean, this is all original. This is everything that they actually archived from the man. And then, so you get original, like, blueprints for Epcot is on this board as well. Then you go, you see he has a bunch of scripts, and those are all, like, original. 100% all original. It is kind of crazy that, or maybe they're not. I don't know. Maybe they're bullshitting, but this is what they say. This is what they told us. And like somebody asked, like, whose scripts are those? And she's like, well, nothing you'd know because they never produced them. I'm like, you sure? You sure about that? Okay. And they did keep a reference to him smoking, by the way. In case you're wondering, there's an ashtray with a box of matches that says Walt Disney Productions. And if you look at that logo right there, we get a pin with that on there, which is very weird. The next thing that you'll see is his little room that they call his private suite. And they don't actually know what was in this room. All they know is that there was a kitchenette. You go into the kitchenette and there's like some glasses with his name engraved, his initials, WED, engraved on it. And in there they show, oh, here's the chili and the food he would eat. And this is very obviously a museum display. I saw the exact same thing at the Walt Disney Family Museum. In fact, I think it's the exact 100% display that they have there. And then you leave Walt's office. So I don't know. What's your take on Walt's office there?
How did they not know what was in that side room? How do you just not know? Aren't there people like still alive that had been there?
Because they never took a photo. This is what they say. Dave Smith only took one photo of it, and only that's it. And he wanted to respect Walt's privacy. So they just put a bunch of displays in there. Now, what it likely was is this is where Walt was getting his massages from his private nurse. where he would have a scotch and a massage to soothe his polo injury in his later days. That's likely what this room was. Who knows otherwise? But yeah, so that is the Walt's office tour, and it's very exciting. Then you get a bunch of pins as a like a thank you, and then you leave the animation building. So this is all on the top, like the third floor of the animation building. Then they take you to Legends Plaza, and you've seen this before with the building. I believe yes. It was designed by Michael Graves, right?
I don't know.
I think it was Michael Graves because it's the Michael Eisner building.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this is where they have all of the plaques for the Disney legends. They also have the original bench with Roy Disney and Minnie Mouse. And they also have a version of the partner statue that you can climb on. I'm not joking. You can climb on it.
Did they tell you that you can climb on it?
You can climb on it. I'm not joking. You can go right up. You can hug Walt. You can pat Mickey on the head. You can do all of that. It's crazy. But anyways, so I took some photos of the Disney Legends plaques like Rolly Crump, Bob Gurr, Tony Baxter, Leota Toombs, some of my favorites, and of course, Wally Bogue. And there are also my favorite one was in a row, Johnny Depp, Danny Elfman, right there on top.
There you go. There you go.
Terrific. Thumbs up to you. And then you can see I got right up close to Walt and Mickey looking straight down at them. Some people were like just going hands all over Mickey. It was kind of nuts. The next thing you do is go into the Frank G. Wells building. And this building is where Marvel is. And this is where on the second, third, and fourth floors is the Marvel production offices. And on the first floor is the Starbucks for the entire studio. So they, of course, have their own Starbucks. And it has a, like, you know, those sandwich boards that are in Starbucks that have things drawn on them? This one has Stitch on them, which was cute. I didn't get a photo of it. And, of course, this is the headquarters for the Walt Disney Archives. Now, when we went in, this place is swamped. This was probably about 3 p.m. It is littered with people working on Marvel. And now, when you go to the Marvel production offices, you wouldn't expect it to be filled with a bunch of dorks wearing Marvel swag and holding comic books and stuff like that. You would think that's kind of a cliche, but it's true. Almost everybody there were holding comic books and talking like dorks. I'm not joking. We weren't allowed to take photos of any of the employees, but so many of them were. One guy was wearing a Deadpool a crew jacket and holding a Deadpool comic. It is crazy.
You gotta separate work and life. Yeah. You need a better work-life balance.
I guess Feige really does. You know, he employs the cult. That's what it is. anyways, there's also I think one the internet cafe area is called Bunsen and Beaker's Lab, which I thought that is adorable. Anyways, the Walt Disney Archives, you go into the lobby of the archives. Now, it's actually really small. And the reason why it's small is that there is a giant filing area in the back that you can clearly see. You are not allowed to go into there. But there's a giant filing area and a bunch of computers. But the real archives are spread throughout the San Fernando Valley. And that's what it is. They're all in unmarked warehouses. If you ever saw the show that they took off Disney Plus, because of course they did, called Prop Culture, you actually get to see the hosts. You remember that?
Yeah.
You get to see the hosts go to one of these unmarked warehouses. But you do get to go into the lobby of the archives where they have a bunch of stuff set up. The most interesting things are the Alice animatronic from the original version of the Alice in Wonderland ride. So there's that. So they actually do have one animatronic in there. But the weirdest thing is that they have this bookcase. And the bookcase is filled with every book written on Disney ever. And I was like, no. So I went looking, and no, it's true. There is every book written on Disney ever. As long as it's not self-published, every book. Like, I was like, can it go this obscure? Yes, it goes that obscure. It was wild. This is giant bookcase going through it. The one thing that you get to do there, so she goes to a desk, our tour guide, who was Hannah, by the way. She was fantastic. She opens, has this archivist open a drawer, and there's like, it's in a black cloth, and she brings it out, and it is an Oscar, like an Oscar award. And so you're get to hold one of Walt Disney's Academy Awards. And an Oscar is kind of heavy, but not as heavy as the subject behind of which it was won for. Now, out of all the Oscars, what film do you think that I got to hold? You probably know.
I know this. Is it one of the Was it one of the nature documentaries?
Yes, it was, yes.
Yeah.
White Wilderness. I got to hold the Oscar for White Wilderness, the film in which documentarians threw a bunch of lemmings off a cliff. So that was terrific. I just loved that. So then after that, they take you through the hallways. You get to see a multi-plane camera. You can snap a few photos of the Marvel production offices, which you're not allowed to obviously open. But there's a bunch of props. I think like Tony Stark's original suit is up in there. And then they take you into the original inking and painting building. The ink and paint building is where Lucasfilm is. And so you're going down this long hallway, and at the very end, there's a set of double doors. And through that, you can see a big lit up sign that says Lucasfilm LTD. You are not allowed to take a photo of that sign. Why? I don't know. Just, you're not allowed. But just like the animation building, there's a bunch of art and displays about the ink and paint process that you get to look at, and of course cells. And then you go to the end, and there's two doors that say Lucasfilm. And if you take that photo, I guess Kathleen Kennedy will come out and snap your neck, even though there's nothing about it. So how do you get out of this building? You have to turn left and go out a back alleyway. So you go out a back alley. And in this alleyway, I mean, it's a literal alleyway. There is a couple of windows. And this is where they make reproduction cells. And they get to let you see it. It's like two original ink and paint offices where they still make reproduction cells for the market and special events and occasions and stuff like that. So you get to see that. Then you get to go, you see the water tower, and then there's a photo op with the castle. Finally, you get to go walk around a few more buildings, and then you get to go to some sound stages. We actually got to go to the sound stage where the infinity stage, the volume, is. We didn't get to go inside it, but we did get to see it. That's where they filmed The Mandalorian. And then there was another stage that was open where they were wrapping up the recently canceled station 19. Then you're let loose. You get to buy some stuff in the store, and that's pretty much it. Wow, this went on like 30 minutes. Anybody who's thirsting to talk about, you know, Walt Disney World hotels, I hope the wait was worth it. But anyways, yeah, so that's the Walt Disney Studios tour. You have any thoughts after taking that with me?
It seems really interesting. Doesn't seem like much has changed. I'm fascinated by the way that they've kind of like integrated Lucasfilm and Marvel into the traditional Walt Disney Studios. I don't know. It seems very cool, and everyone should go look at your photos on your Twitter.
Yeah. So now I have to ask you, do you think this is worth $150? You get three pins.
It's... Maybe for the pins alone. It's pretty steep, but I completely understand it. Like, honestly, I would have imagined it'd be more expensive.
Yeah, I was surprised by that. I was imagining it was going to be more expensive too, or only, you know, only for gold D23 members. I think they do get a discount. I think it's only 100 for them. But I was actually kind of pleasantly surprised for like a one-time thing, like, you know, you to do in your life. It's cool. I mean, like, I've never done this before. And, you know, I've been to Disneyland a billion times. Why not go here, a studio that is so iconic and it's a lot more than its back lot. It's really beautiful and well manicured. And I honestly had a great time doing it. Anything else before we go on to the main topic?
I think you covered it pretty in depth.
Perfectly. All right, guys. So we're going to go now to our main topic.
Don't matter what you look like. Don't matter what you wear. How many rings you got on your finger. We don't care. No, we don't care. Don't matter where you come from.
Okay, here we are for our main topic. Really quick, before we get into it, there is one thing I forgot, and that is throughout the entire tour, many times you can look out and see the hospital that is right across the street from the studio, also known as the hospital where Walt Disney died. I kept thinking about that every time I saw this Providence Hospital. Next time you're in that area and you look one way and to your right is the Disney studio that has all the Mickey Mouses on it. Yeah, Mickey Mouse shapes everywhere, by the way. And then you can look to the left and see where Walt Disney perished. So that was cool. All right. So finally, let's talk about unbuilt Walt Disney World Resort hotels. All right. So before we cap this off, can I ask you what Disney World resorts have you ever stayed in?
Oh my God. Okay, that's a great question. One that I probably should have actually come with a list. Do you want the full like running list?
I didn't know it was going to be that much.
What do you? So Walt Disney World is my home. That's my ground, right? So mm-hmm. I mean, I've stayed at Pop Century, I've stayed at Caribbean Beach, I've stayed at Coronado Springs, I've stayed at the Riviera, I've stayed at the Polynesia, stayed at both Port Orleans.
Oh,
not the Riviera. What's it? The Riviera is at I'm sorry, I haven't stayed at Riviera. The one with the tower?
Coronado Springs. That's great.
Coronado Springs. Yeah, I stayed not at the tower, so I stayed at Coronado.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, both Port Orleans.
Next, tell me you stayed at the Boardwalk.
Key West, I've stayed at the Boardwalk. I've stayed at the Beach Club.
Oh!
I've stayed at... I mean, so yeah, I've tried. The goal has been to just keep trying to hit all of them. Some of them are getting harder.
Have you ever stayed in the Boondocks, aka All-Star?
I have stayed at All-Stars.
You have?
I've stayed at All-Stars. Let's see, I stayed at Pop Century... Trying to think, I've stayed at Pop Century. Have I stayed at All Stars? Maybe not. All Star, is there All Stars movies, right?
Movies, yeah.
That's why I haven't stayed at Pop Century. I've stayed at All Stars movies. That's what it is. Yeah.
I think I can count it on one hand. I've stayed at All Star movies, Pop Century, Art of Animation, and Port Orleans. Yep, that's it.
I should also add the Dolphin. I've stayed at the Dolphin.
Oh man, striking me through the heart with these.
I mean, look, it's this and Animal Kingdom Lodge. There you go, that too. Jeez, Look about how much money my parents, when I was younger, and me as I got older, blew on these hotels. They're truly a waste. I'll say, just at the head of this, all of the hotels are a waste of money. You can stay like a Hilton.
Which one of them were your favorites?
I mean, I think that if you're specifically just the hotel, so not including like the location, mm-hmm. proximity to the parks, because in that case, it's any of the boardwalk resorts is obviously
right into Epcot. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's unbeatable. But like hotel, I think my favorite is probably Port Orleans Riverside.
Really?
I quite like the bayou.
That's
kind
funny
of aesthetic.
Because I haven't stayed at Riverside, but I did stay at French Quarter.
French Quarter is nice. I don't like French Quarter as much. I prefer Riverside. I think it's got a bit more charm to it. But I think French Quarter is maybe the nicer quote unquote resort. Mm-hmm. What's the one across from Disney Springs?
The one directly across?
Yeah.
Oh, is that
Saratoga?
Yeah, it's Saratoga.
Yeah, I just stayed there. That used to be the Disney Institute. Put that on the list too.
Yeah. I mean, I would say by default, my favorite is also French Quarter. I really, really adored that place. And that'll come at the end of our discussion today.
For what it's worth, just to mention, I didn't put Polynesian on the list, and I have stayed there, but the resort, it might as well be like the same as visiting. So I know a lot of people would say Polynesian, but I'd say you can probably get the Polynesian experience staying at the Animal Kingdom Lodge.
I've gone to the Poly. I've drank at Trader Sam's.
Exactly.
It's great. I've stepped foot in a lot of Disney resorts, and not stay there, but I've never stepped foot in Grand Flow. I think like if I stepped one foot in the Grand Floridian, it feels like somebody would come up and look at my wallet and go, "Not rich enough," and then kick me out, put me right back on the monorail, send me back around. but anyways, today we are talking about unbuilt Walt Disney World resorts. And what's interesting about the resort is even though, it makes up quite a bit of a time of, bulk of our vacation, though to me, it's not that big of a deal. Some people are like, entranced by their resorts and, it's almost like, more important than the parks itself. To me, it's a means to an end. It's a place to sleep, even though, All-Star movies, you might as well not be staying on property. I'm not joking, because you know how the bus system, the transportation system for All-Star movies works? I might have said this on a bonus podcast before.
Having stayed there, if I remember correctly, is it that they're all connected?
Okay. So each one has, of course, its own separate bus terminal. The joke, though, is that it goes to each one,
right?
Just one bus. So the bus will stop at sports, collect people. It'll then next go to music, collect people. Then it'll go to movies and collect people. But if it's too full, it'll just keep bypassing movies. So you have to hope that not enough people have gone on the buses from sports and music. It is so broken. It's absolutely insane. I remember trying to get to Disney Springs, and it took me like 30 minutes to realize I'm never getting on one of these fucking buses unless I walk to music. So I walked to music and I got on the bus there, and it was a bunch of it was a cheerleading competition that was there. Of course the fun was. So then that's how I got Disney Springs that time. But yeah, the hell on earth is they want to punish you for taking the value. That's what I feel. But we're not talking about what is purchasable in reality. We're talking about places you might have gone to if they were built. So let's begin. When Walt City of the Future was abandoned, the Imagineers and directors of the Walt Disney Company focused on turning Project Florida into the vacation kingdom of the world. Of course, everybody thinks of Central Theme Park Magic Kingdom, but that was only a piece of the puzzle. Campgrounds, golf courses, water skiing, and elaborate resorts to stay and dine in would fill out the initial plan. Phase 1 included the Contemporary Resort and the Polynesian Resort. Both were built. Phase 2, however, called for an additional 4 resorts, only one of which was built, the Golf Resort. This, of course, was because Card Walker, Disney's then CEO, taking over after Roy Disney's death, was obsessed with golf. The Golf Resort was briefly the Disney Inn from 86 to 94, with a Snow White theme. In 1994, the Department of Defense secured a 100-year lease and renamed the Hotel Shades of Green, a sly double reference to both the nearby golf courses and military uniforms. It is now strictly for military families, veterans, or non. Unless you are rich with a registered guest, you're not getting in. You'll be shot on sight. Now it's the time where Ryan Dorman tells me that he has stayed at Shades of Green. Go ahead.
No, unfortunately. That'll be the one I never make it to.
Oh, I'm sure it's like your dad will go, "Hey, my military buddy, he got us in."
And just go on Facebook or something. Just like hire somebody to pretend to be your military friend.
Now we can stay at Shades of Green. I guarantee you that is happening. I guarantee
I'm sure it does. I'm sure people are selling their military like ID or their, I don't know.
They're probably going with them. And it's like, okay, now if you say something, you're my second cousin removed.
Yeah, but there's like, how would you go about even doing that? Like, are they going to stay in your hotel with you or are you going to like say goodbye?
Leave and then you, I'm guessing that would be it. And what are they going to do? Like patrol and make sure, wait a second. no, they're not. But it is interesting that now there's this military resort nestled between the two golf courses that like nobody talks about. Like nobody talks about Shades of Green. I mean, it's because you can't really stay there or eat there, but it exists. It's like the dirty secret. I mean, I remember it's actually, I mean, it looks like a country club because this was the golf resort. And I remember like hearing about Shades of Green and never seeing like a photo of it. And I always like pictured a hotel tower like in camouflage. That's like always what I imagine. But it's like nothing. It's like just a really nice country club themed resort. And that's pretty much it. But what happened to the other four resorts? What happened? So we're going to discuss about four proposed resorts and one final thing that is really, really cool. So let's begin with the Asian Hotel. The Asian Hotel is probably the most iconic of the original proposed hotels. This is the one you could see in the show notes there. It juts out onto that peninsula and is kind of like a fortress kind of looking place. To use lack of a better term, because that was kind of the style of the time, kind of very oriental theme. The closest to getting built, the Seven Seas Lagoon, was fitted with a square outcrop peninsula specifically for the Asian resort, highly touted in souvenir guides to the upcoming Walt Disney World resorts. And you can see photos there of when they made the Seven Seas Lagoon, they actually put the little square there. Inspired by Thai architecture, the resort would have been a trip to Thailand, much like the Polynesian resort is a trip to oceanic nations or Hawaii. Plans featured a central building with a topper that rose 160 feet in the air, surrounded by guest wings on the perimeter of the square land. Guest rooms would either face inward towards the Thai-inspired gardens or out into the lagoon, creating the illusion that one is all on the Gulf just outside Bangkok. The main building would feature a similar restaurant, such as Contemporary's Top of the World, now the California Grill, located above the resort with fantastic views of Magic Kingdom's firework displays. Originally planned to have 600 rooms, it was downscaled to 500 before its cancellation. The lobby wing would feature a monorail station above, and from the 1972 annual report, recognizing, however, that the public will always prefer to stay within the Vacation Kingdom site, the company will soon begin architectural work on the third theme resort, the 500-room Asian Hotel. Construction is planned for 1974, with a formal opening date to take place that year. So this was going to be the next resort that they built. However, the Arab oil embargo in 1973 caused tourism to hit a downward trend, and the hotel was killed. The square-shaped land sat empty until the 1980s, where good old Michael Eisner greenlit a long-gestating project, a tribute to old Floridian beach hotels from the turn of the century. Of course, this is the Grand Flow, which none of us can afford to stay at. And you can actually see in that aerial photo of the Grand Floridian, them taking that square shape. They built a little inlet, you could see, to allow for a marina, but mostly it's that exact shape that they had built for the Asian Hotel all that time ago. So what are your thoughts on the Asian Hotel?
It reminds me of, this is horrible, but I guess like that kind of, as you said, oriental style was like a thing back in the 70s. And of course, it kind of just lasted into relatively recently. I remember when I was young, my family would take me to the the Trump Taj Mahal in Atlantic City. That same kind of like absurd, hyper-gilded, you know, dragons all over the place, kind of Eastern architecture kind of thing. I think that like it probably would have been incredibly interesting. I don't know. The problem with discussing this hotel is like you can either discuss it as in a vacuum and say like it's really well designed. I like that kind of center space that we see in the photo. Like it's like a dining hall. Yeah. I think there's that. And then there's like the what an incredible difficulty one might have keeping that into the modern day. But Disney's kind of juggling that with the Polynesian right now. So it seems a bit of a foregone conclusion that inevitably they're going to have to deal with the cultural sensitivity stuff.
Right. I was thinking the exact same thing. Here in Las Vegas, we used to have a hotel that was called the Imperial Palace. You can actually see this hotel in the original Austin Powers. They stay at the Imperial Palace, and it is just as culturally dated as you would think it was in the like early teens. They transformed it into, I think the first name was the Quad, and then they said, they realized that is the worst name we have ever heard. Let's make it into the Link. So it's now the Link. You go there and zero trace of Imperial Palace is still there, but I definitely think that Disney by now would have modernized it. You know, I mean, honestly, that same goes for almost everything we're going to talk about today, that all of this will be modernized. And I think this especially so. But the question is, I don't know if they would modernize the exterior. Definitely the interior. The interior would definitely be taken. I don't know what they would do with the hotel. Now, I do have to say something that is your favorite thing that we do on this show. I know you love this.
I knew it. I was trying to bite my tongue. Like, how long can I go without mentioning Mulan or something?
Yes. Yes, you knew exactly where I was going. How long until every room is themed to Mulan? Now, Mulan
takes the Last place. Dragon.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. That's true. But Mulan comes first, even though Mulan takes place in China and this is Thailand. But who's counting? It's like, well, China is in Asia. Let's just, you know, make it all Chinese. And Mushu will be in the fun, you know, restaurant, you know, and we'll have the cricket on all the pillows. Remember she had a pet cricket?
What I will say about Disney...
You go into the lobby and they're playing music of I'll Make a Man Out of You.
Now that I could see. That, like, just that incredibly bad, like, elevator style.
And then, transition, you know, reflections of you know, you just kind of hear it in the background.
I think one thing that they've actually been pretty good about, and I'll give them credit for, is not over theming the hotels to one specific property. I don't think there has been a single case where that's happened outside of the Pixar hotel in Disney.
Temporary.
Yeah, but it's not Incredibles. Like it's called the Incredibles Hotel. Like, true, yes, we did theme true. It to the rooms right, to the but, Incredibles. But
that's what I mean. I don't think they would theme it like this is the Disney Mulan Hotel. I think it would still be the Disney Asian Resort because changing signs is expensive. But if it's Disney Asian Resort with a bunch of Mulan all over it, people will want to stay there because they can take their photos with, you know, God, I can't remember the character that Donny Osmond played that. Donny Osmond plays a character in that movie. He plays the love interest. Whitest guy. God damn it. Was Donny Osmond, was he just a singing voice? I think he was just a singing voice and another actor portrayed it. Oh, I'm going to have to look this up. Keep vamping while I look this up.
I think that here I can fill up space. Basically, I think that the hotel, would probably obviously receive those room changes. I think that, like, as a general idea, it seems pretty interesting. Obviously, there was some forward thinking here. We might step back and think that the Seven Seas Lagoon is not that's the Seven Seas Lagoon, right? We would step back and we don't really think of that now as like a world traveler kind of experience. There's the Polynesian, the Grand Floridian, the Contemporary, the Wilderness Lodge. The Asian hotel would certainly be rather unique, something you might imagine finding along World Showcase. In fact, it seems like an early kind of attempt to deliver that worldly experience that would inspire the World Showcase shopping experiences. However, I'm not really like opposed to it. It looks kind of cool from the outside. It isn't doing very much to attract me right now, though, unfortunately.
Okay, so for everybody who's screaming at their iPhones or stereos or wherever you're listening to this, B.D. Wong plays Captain Li Shang, but Donnie Osmond does the singing voice. Yes, B.D. Wong, the secret villain of the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World films, is the voice of Captain Li Shang. However, this does not take Mulan off the hook. Harvey Fierstein plays an Asian character, and so does June Foray. it's not 100% wonderful, but did you know that the dog of Mulan is played by Stitch himself, Chris Sanders? I did not know that. Things you learn in the middle of a podcast recording. Anyway,
if you're listening to Unbuilt on like your big speaker system, like you download it to a flash drive and you put it in your $50,000 speakers, I highly respect you. That's you're listening to it the only way it should be listened to. I want you to hear the bass of my voice.
They're super old school and they're holding up like a 90s boombox.
They have like one of those beeswax cylinders. They download every episode to a beeswax cylinder and they
They're putting Unbuilt on vinyl. Oh, cool.
when you close up shop, Ryan, I think you need to put our best episodes on vinyl.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that to be clear, I guess let me correct what I said. If you're screaming at the there's a lot of reasons always to scream at your phone while watching the show or listening, but the Grand Floridian, of course, opened later, right? So that's not necessarily relevant to what I was saying. Same with the Wilderness Lodge, right? But I do think that like this, and as we'll talk about with some of the other ones, right, this kind of other exploring the world style is a very early push into what would essentially become Epcot's bread and butter. I'm not convinced that this is like the most interesting hotel, but I'm curious to know what your thoughts are here.
My thoughts are I really, really like the layout of the hotel. I think it's really cool how the hotel sits right on water. That's really cool. And that's an idea that they keep playing around with and never really seem to commit to. That's a really cool idea. Like you can look out right onto the lagoon and it has kind of that fortress feel. But otherwise, it's really not setting my imagination on fire. Another, you know, restaurant that looks out onto Magic Kingdom. Whoopee. It's fine. I think, I mean, not to be like racist or anything, because, you know, this does get replaced by the Grand Floridian, the whitest of white things ever. I do think that the Grand Flow is probably a better use, a more intelligent use of this space. Because there's so much to do in it, and maybe they would have, you know, perfected some of those things. So it's not like the greatest thing in the world. I could take it or leave it.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. That's all you have to say on that. So let's.
I agree. I think you summarized it pretty well. It's not. It's interesting, but it's not really.
Yeah.
Anything attractive just yet. Mm-hmm.
So let's move on to something that I also could take or leave. Not to give it away, but it's the Persian Hotel. Bay Lake was set to have a hotel with the Persian, an inverted take on Disney's Asian resorts. So you could see this. It's pretty much like the same thing, except it's heading into land instead of jutting out onto the water. And there's that big, you know, dome, this 24-foot dome in the middle. Themed to Iran, this blue and white resort would have guests staying in an ancient mosque preserved to time. The monorail would have a second line extended to this entrance that would drop guests into Tomorrowland instead, and guests could use a marina jutting out into the lake. A brilliant blue dome was the centerpiece of the hotel, towers on all sides going towards the land in its perimeter rather than the other way around, letting the south portion sit bare towards the lake. Here, beautiful Persian beaches and pools would be nestled up against Bay Lake, which is the last place you should be swimming. Similar to the contemporary, a convention center would be attached, and of course, Iranian restaurants. Initially axed by the same oil crisis in 1978, the Shah of Iran is courted by Disney for the World Showcase at Epcot, personally by Marty Sklar. It's here that he learns from him about the canceled hotel, for which the land was still barren. The Shah then attempts to fund the entire hotel himself. What was deposed in an Iranian revolution a year later, and then dies the year later after that from cancer. The Iran Pavilion at Epcot also never built. This is one of the funniest stories. I can't remember where I heard this. Either it was from Jim Hill. I think it's Jim Hill, about Marty Sklar being in Iran and like seeing the protests on the street. And he would go like, what's that all about? That's interesting. And the Shah would be like, don't pay attention to that. That's not important. Can we build this hotel, please? So, that is the Persian Hotel. What are your thoughts? Not much to go on.
No, I mean, like, I quite like the architecture. I like the kind of structure of the hotel that it's built around. It kind of circles this main center point. Besides that, like you're saying, there really isn't much to go on. I think that, like, an Iranian hotel is maybe something that they might have to grapple with politically into the future. but I do think that, like, generally it looks pretty. I think I like the architecture here more than I like the Asian resort, the Asian hotel. I like the kind of structure of the hotel here, but it does feel, at least by current standards, a little out of place. Compared to everything else around it.
I agree. The coolest thing about this is the monorail line that goes to Epcot. Tomorrowland. That's the coolest thing. And that would be really cool to have like a monorail that goes to the front entrance and also a backdoor monorail. That's cool. Like, imagine having your own little monorail system. But that's pretty much like the only thing that would be cool. I'm not sure exactly where this is. I think this might be where the Bay Lake Tower is now. I'm not 100% sure. This could have been, you know, interesting thing. I like the idea that these are all like themed to famous exotic locales, or, well, more exotic back then, certainly. And I like that kind of idea. And I like the kind of the marbled pool that kind of looks out onto the lake with the marina. That's a really cool idea. Though I hope that there's more palm trees. Because the Florida sun in that, especially bouncing off all that white architecture, that's gonna be an oven.
Well, they have to keep it thematically appropriate. The goal is to melt everybody there.
Yeah, but really nothing that, like, you know, lights myself on fire really that much. And that's pretty much all I have to say about it. I mean, I hate to dispose it so quickly, but unless you have any other thoughts on it.
No, again, it's like there's very little to go off of besides the design. And while I think it's pretty, it's hard to grapple on to anything more complicated than that. And that's about it.
Yeah. So the next thing is Disney's Mediterranean Resort. This one has a very unique design. In the early 90s, Disney tried to one-up the Grand Floridian's four-star accommodation with the Mediterranean Resort, a splashy Greek isle-themed resort. Sitting on the lagoon, the property would be filled with gorgeous rockwork spilling into more bodies of water and sandy beaches. Designed by architect Antoine Predrock, who passed away last month, actually, in March of 2024. This is what his website says about the project. This 1,000-room hotel, designed for the Disney Development Corporation at Walt Disney World, synthesizes the timeless cultural and geographical essence of the Mediterranean Rim, while providing clearly organized accommodations for visitors to the Magic Kingdom and Epcot. That's interesting. This is 1990, and they don't mention Disney MGM Studios, and efficient and comfortable facilities for conventions and meetings. The complex creates a self-contained urban environment, including several restaurants and links by advanced public transport systems, including the monorail, to the other facilities and transport hubs in the area. The hotel invokes the labyrinth courtyards and the sensual gardens of the Mediterranean, as well as the white architecture in the region. Not as literal extrapolations, but as abstract readings. The site for the hotel along the edge of a lake is spectacular, and the wings of the building reach out to embrace and capture part of the lake as a swimming area for guests, gesturing towards the Magic Kingdom beyond. Ambiguous architectural fragments scattered through the water suggest a timeless ancient culture and reinforce the sense of having entered a fantastic realm removed from ordinary reality. Departing from the central bay are guest rooms which look down into the water that add an element of spectacle and festivity to this inner sanctum. other areas of the guest rooms surround linked courtyards, also evoking the Mediterranean culture and landscape, while creating this uniquely recognizable rendezvous points and affording shelter and respite during the Florida summer. Breezes from the lake, augmented by water events throughout the complex, provide relief from the heat, and the sound of water creates a soothing backdrop, as well as masking outside noise from the comfort of the hotel guests. Other environmental responses, such as inductive airflow for cooling, bind the Mediterranean hotel to its Florida environment and reduce a need for mechanical air cooling. Okay, sure it does. At the same time, however, the hotel opens a way to explore realms of fantasy and delight. Reduce the need for mechanical air conditioning? BS! You're going to need AC no matter what. One unique thing about the Mediterranean Resort was its 150-foot tall half-shell amphitheater that not only could host shows, but, surprise, surprise, give guests an ultimate view of Magic Kingdom's fireworks show. You can see it right up there, a giant amphitheater. The project was canceled in the early 90s due to the land being too unstable for construction after 20-plus years of neglect and forestation. Swampland is very hard to build on. So what are your thoughts here?
This one's prettier. I like the colors. I think that the architecture is really nice. And the amphitheater is a neat idea for the fireworks shows. Seems like there's a lot more going on here, at least in the base design, compared to the other two that we've looked at.
Yeah, I am more interested in this one. This is the one that has a really unique design. It's not my favorite of these. We'll get to those. But I really, really like some of the kookier ideas, like really going into this, you know, kind of ancient Greek architecture flowing off of it, all the rock work in the middle. And of course, you know, the kind of like the semicircle hotel. This is probably the most unique of the resort designs. I think if they got this one built, this would have been something really special. Now, it would have been more snazzy than the Grand Flow. So again, we would never in a million years be able to afford to stay there. But it is cool. You know, you would see TikToks from that amphitheater and go, you know, someday that'll be me looking at the fireworks on that amphitheater. You know, and if you listen to like the Disney Dish, you know, Len would be like, so I recently stayed in the Mediterranean villas the other night and had a really great time. We went up to the amphitheater and just great view of the fireworks, Jim. That's it exactly, you know, and all that. I've clearly listened to Len and Jim too much. But I really think this is a really cool design. And I would have loved to see this.
I can't really disagree with what you're saying. You've been on a roll here. It just seems like I don't know. A lot of these like really kind of bougie hotels remind me of something like the Riviera Tower. If, you know, nowadays that's opening, this might have opened before. No. Either way, it'd be quite expensive. It seems like it'd be a quite immersive kind of experience, which is nice. That's kind of a thing that hasn't really stayed like as a core part of the hotels in some ways. Like, you know, compare the Polynesian to, I don't know, the Riviera is actually a fine example. I think that like this looks like it might fit the aesthetic more of the Seven Seas Lagoon than the other ones that we talked about, but it's still not to the detail in the design where like I understand why I would stay here over somewhere else. Still a lot of just like, you know, interesting ideas and a lot of interesting architecture.
Yeah, true. Now, this is a very bougie hotel. And, you know, Grand Floridian, also a bougie hotel. And you wouldn't think that they would, you know, I don't know, add IP to the bougie hotel, but they did, as clear as what the what isn't one of the places the Grand Flow now themed to Beauty and the Beast. So
one of the bars is now themed to Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, so this this Mediterranean resort, it's themed to, you know, Greek Isles. And
what do you got? Like, what I don't think there's anything Hercules.
Bless my soul, Herc's on a roll. Oh no, here come the muses. Here I think comes that's James possible. Woods.
For what it's worth, if we're playing armchair, like, evil, corporate, soulless piece of shit, then, yeah, I would say that there would be, like, a dinner show or something. I don't know. I
feel that the amphitheater would, you know, host nightly Hades stand-ups where they would do their best James Wood. Hey, have you heard about this? this. So, you know who's in the news? Joe Biden, sleepy Joe Biden, you know. And he would just go rant off about 5G and conspiracy theories and all that.
About 5G. I think that for what it's worth, it's not really worth much. I think I feel like I'm on one of those like shitty websites that are like, well, what would happen if this thing took over this thing? And it's like, that's great. That's good, kid. Go back and put your essay in ChatGPT.
That's all the show is.
Better. Yeah. Well, no.
Disney company ruin a good idea?
That's the pure cynicism. That's why people keep coming back. They come for the comedy and they leave because nothing can stay good. But I think, surely there might be a little bit of Hercules stuff here. Though if you want to ruin it, that's right.
Yeah, all right, you know. Zeus is coming in, he's throwing down his lightning bolts, and Hercules statue's going right in the center, and Hercules coming is like, I can go the distance, and he's like standing there proud as everyone goes, I love Hercules. And they get a photo with Meg and, you know, animatronic Pegasus. And it's just delightful. You know, you go to the character breakfast and there's that. They probably made a costume for Phil. I don't know. And then there's Pain and Panic and whoever Bobcat Goldthwait voiced which one of them. They had to recast because don't you remember that?
When
he quit? He quit because of like some controversy that Disney was going through and he was pissed off about it. And so he was like, I quit! You know, and he quit. I can't do Bobcat. Sorry. Anyways, so that's what's going to happen to the Mediterranean resort. So let's move on to the Venetian resort. Before the Mediterranean, Disney was going to join the Asian and the Persian with what else? The Venetian, not to be confused with the Las Vegas Hotel, which I worked at twice. The Venetian from the 1970 press release. At the Venetian Resort, a small enclosed boat harbor and intricate system of waterways will recreate the old world charm of the gamed Italian city of canals. Shopping will be a very unique experience as guests travel by gondola along streets of water and under ornate bridges linking various sections of the resort. The style is reminiscent of St. Mark's Square, complete with a 120-foot campanile, which I'm so sorry, campanile, I do not know how to pronounce this. I don't know if you want to give it a shot.
Find it in the
pronunciation. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which will toll the time. It's, you know, it's a clock tower. Okay. Damn it. As with the other hotels, the occupancy would be 500 rooms, but this time located centrally in one building with the amenities stretching out into the canals and some deluxe suites on the side. And you can see it there. You see that giant St. Mark's Square and that giant tower there. And there's that clock tower as well, or I think it's a bell tower. I don't know. It's a tower. They have it in Epcot. Okay.
The Epcot Tower,
The pool will be themed to St. Mark's Square, just like the others. The resort was canceled by the effects of the Arab oil embargo, but Disney revised the pitch in the late 90s, deeming it the Disney's Grande Venezia Resort. Whew, this one's cool. Like, it's crazy. It looks like freaking Versailles or something like that. This is nuts. Designed by architecture firm Wemberly Allison Tong and Gu, who did the Disneyland Hotel in Paris. This sprawling, beautiful hotel would be truly massively complex and was to be the crown jewel of the then fledgling Disney Vacation Club. Boo! Boo! Dorman, sorry, are you DVC?
No.
You're not. Okay, go. Boo! Boo! Fuck you, DVC. Guests would be greeted by a beautiful garden courtyard with a fountain in the center, and the hotel and towers intermixed with canals that guests can traverse either via bridges or gondolas. Of course, you can also take your boats out onto Seven Seas Lagoon. Another mini recreation of St. Mark's Square would host shopping. And I actually worked in a recreation of St. Mark's Square at the Venetian when I worked at the Void many, many years ago. So you could see blueprints from a heritage auction that went up for this resort. And a conference center, of course, a wedding chapel would complete the resort, which could have been Disney's coolest. Alas, this was also canceled due to high costs and a need to rein in spending. Damn you, Michael Eisner. Look at this concept art.
It looks amazing.
This looks amazing.
And it's unsurprising that it looks so amazing because it just looks like Disney Sea. It's much bigger, of course, than Disney Sea. But what's it called?
Miracosta.
Yeah, the Miracosta Resort. That essentially, I mean, actually, to be completely honest with you, if you look at the second piece of concept art here in the show notes, and you look at that little fountain in the front, put like a globe right there.
True.
You have the entrance to Disney Sea, and then you walk through. Frankly, I would be very surprised if some of this concept art didn't make its way over into the plannings for Tokyo Disney Sea, because it's really quite similar. Not exactly, but that little entrance plaza right in front of the fountain in that second concept art. I don't know how to make it any more clear what I'm saying, but that's quite literally, like, nearly exactly the design structure for the Disney Sea entrance. I think that this is, like, far and away the best, the one that you've shared, though.
Yeah.
Like
this, now, to be fair, this architecture firm did not work on any Tokyo projects. So the only thing they designed for Disney was the Disneyland Hotel in Paris and this. So, but this is cool. Like, there's no other way to put it. It's so cool. Pretty much, so you don't have to pull your car to the side. And I'll post these on Twitter, obviously. But pretty much, it's like you first have this gorgeous, luxurious garden that welcomes you, its own monorail station. And then you go in, and the hotel complex is sprawling and has, it's pretty much like a semicircle with an island in the middle, and that's its own hotel complex with a pool in the middle. So it's kind of like little rings of canals. It is gorgeous. And of course, on the right hand side, you could see the faux St. Mark Square right in there. There's no other way to put it. This would have been like the boardwalk, a little mini shopping complex, just awesomeness all on its own.
It's massive. And the one worry maybe that I could even produce, and this might be nitpicking, is that it's so big.
Yes, it is. Yes.
I imagine it's no wonder why
that this was canceled, because they were cutting back, because this would have cost a fortune.
Right. And remind me here, this is on the Seven Seas Lagoon, right?
Yes.
There's no I don't see a monorail station, at least in the concept art.
So this would have been, so you could see it on the first piece of concept art.
Over there, yeah.
You could see the grand flow, but if you look at towards the bottom, you'll see a monorail.
Oh, yes, you're right. Wow. Mm-hmm. God,
so this would have been right on the monorail line, and this is where, next to the area where the Mediterranean would have gone.
It's like $150,000 a night. Like, it's...
Oh,
it's like the world's most expensive.
Well, this is DVC, so
exactly.
Pretty much, yeah. you're getting those points in really here. Like, man, I'm just mad this doesn't exist.
It's a shame.
Yeah. It's such a shame. Imagine being on a boat and going through this hotel. Imagine having your room look onto these gorgeous canals. It's so cool. It's so damn cool. Oh, man. This one just hurts.
Yeah.
I really don't know what else to say about it, but to gush over it.
No, it's, I wish there was, like, obviously I'd love to know more about maybe what was planned to be inside of the hotel. And it doesn't seem like it got that far, because it's this incredible, massive hotel.
All I could dig was that there was a conference center and a wedding chapel.
Right.
And, you know, of course, that St. Mark Square recreation. And again, you know, the gondolas, which, again, I mean, you were just saying Disney Sea, but, you know, the gondolas are an attraction at Disney Sea. Did you do the gondolas there?
I did. I did the gondolas there, yeah. I had no fucking clue what was going on.
Yeah. How long of a ride was that?
Maybe 5-10 minutes.
Was
like, I mean, that might even be long. Maybe like 3 to 6 minutes is more appropriate.
How long did you
kind of just do a loop.
Oh, okay. How long?
Yeah. I waited maybe 10-15 minutes, maybe.
Okay, that's not bad. Yeah.
And it's there's like benches as you're waiting. So it really isn't that bad.
Oh, okay. It's like the friendship book. Okay, I got it. All right.
Exactly. Like, it's kind of like it's switchbacks, yeah, benches, and then you do like a circle. It's pretty much like the friendship boats. Mm-hmm. You just do a loop around the entrance to Disney Sea, and then
Mediterranean Harbor, right? Yeah,
yeah. It's not like an actual. Mm-hmm. There's no transportation. You're just doing a loop, and
I mean, to be honest, this would have kicked its ass.
Yeah, no shit. It's like,
yeah,
it would have been massive.
Oh man. Could you imagine how many TikToks of people proposing on those gondolas we would have?
Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, my God. It's like the number of people who would propose there. It basically is even, it's better than real Venice is what the TikTok people might say.
True. Now,
because it's not sinking, right?
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, we can't go this way without hearing, what's that I hear? Silencio Bruno? Oh,
no.
Is that Luca and his friend Alberto coming driving down on their Vespa, coming right into the Grande Venezia Resort? That is him. There they are. They are here. And
I'll be 100% honest.
And Julia, and they're diving in the water. They're becoming sea monsters. Oh, and Maya Rudolph and Jim Gaffigan are here. They are greeting you as well. they were his mom and dad.
I don't even remember that. Honest to God, I did. Yeah, well,
I saw it last month in the re-release. So.
All I will say is that I think it's actually far more likely that they do that they tie in La Luna than they do Luca.
Because
I think that's been their like go-to Italy thing of like it's a Pixar moon. I know it's just a short, but like
now we got Luca. Now we got.
But Luca hasn't caught on.
It was big. It was big one summer it came out.
That's not enough. You sound like the people telling me that like Treasure Planet. Treasure Planet's big. People care about Treasure Planet. It had Burger King toys. It was
way bigger than Treasure Planet.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, it was. It was a big deal. People were, now the merchandise really sold well that summer of 2021. I just like, you just don't know because it didn't go into theaters because of Bob fucking Chapek. but yes, that's what would happen to this beautiful resort. But I think they would have kept it to them just a little minimum. Okay, so our final thing that we're going to talk about is New Orleans Square. You may be wondering, that exists. It's in Disneyland. No, this is Lake Buena Vista, New Orleans Square. Our last hotel is more than just a hotel, more than just a resort. This proposed expansion to the Lake Buena Vista Shopping Center, now the Walt Disney World Village Marketplace, was earmarked as the next big project post-Epcot Center. Dick Nunes, the then head of the Parks and Resorts, now sadly passed, was enamored with the idea of bringing an expanded New Orleans Square to the area. Of course, with the Empress Lily Riverboat, it would fit right in. So the Empress Lily Riverboat restaurant was already there. A Fox Note of Passport to Dreams and her excellent two books, Boundless Realm and Hidden History of Walt Disney World. Dorman, if you haven't read those, highly recommend.
I can't read
these books. You can't read? You're illiterate?
I've been skirting by this podcast on pure luck.
My God. So you go see foreign films with subtitles. And
I'm there
you
for
just,
the vibes.
Just, you're just there for the vibes. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Godzilla Minus One, you were like, I don't know.
That's
what's
why I didn't
going
like
on,
it.
But, yeah.
I had no clue what was going on. It's like,
what are these Japanese men even talking about? All I know is like Godzilla's smucking the shit up. Okay. I don't know what this baby's crying about, but oh, man. I hope they find their way soon. What's this guy crying about, okay? What's this plan that they got cooking up? I don't care. Hope Godzilla's okay. but no, seriously, excellent two books. Her blog is amazing. Definitely 100% recommendation. She's coming out with a book on the Walt Disney World Pirates of the Caribbean later this year. Buy it wherever books are sold electronically, likely. Boundless Realm was in the Walt Disney Archives, which was very cool. I didn't see Hidden History of Walt Disney World yet, but it just came out. She dug up this May 1982 interview by Nunes. But what Walt Disney really wanted to do in Florida was develop an area where all types of corporations, governments, and academia could come together to really try and solve some of the problems that exist in the world today. We started with the recreation area, and then began the community, which the Walt Disney World Village lies. And now we're building the center, Epcot Center, and we're going to connect it all with the monorail system. In addition, we have some dreams for the Walt Disney World Village. From the Empress Lily, we're going to go into a New Orleans street, and you walk right into the beautiful New Orleans Hotel. So this all comes from Fox. She got all of these scans from an internal web presentation. So that's where all this comes from. Past the Empress Lily, you wander in a swampy area befitting of New Orleans on the spot where Pleasure Island later that decade would be built. On the right would be the Garden Restaurant overlooking the Village Lagoon. A quaint sit-down restaurant, it would have its main entrance looking chillingly familiar. Now, what does that look like? Like, what does that look like to you?
The
one that's below. The one that's below the sentence I just said.
You know, I having living in Baltimore, I think that looks just like a mansion I've seen before and nothing else.
A haunted mansion. indeed, the facade would resemble a larger variation of Disneyland's Plantation Manor facade for the Haunted Mansion, seen in better days and decidedly not crawling with ghoulies. So this would be much bigger, and so we kind of recall it, but not be it. So it would kind of be like kind of an Easter egg. On the waterfront, this section would most resemble Disneyland's New Orleans Square, complete with its Cafe Orleans. And now this looks directly from Disneyland. You know, you're going to go down Royal Street and see, you know, bands playing. It would probably be less tight, of course. Mm-hmm. In the square itself would be another very familiar looking building. Inside the facsimile of the Pirates of the Caribbean entrance from Disneyland is what else? The Blue Bayou. Minus the ride, of course, but there still was going to be the indoor swamp filled with fireflies. So the Blue Bayou was going to be built here in Walt Disney World. Isn't that a cool idea? Above the Blue Bayou was to be a complete recreation of the Disney family suite that was built for Walt and his family, because this was going to be the same building. So on the second floor of the Pirates of the Caribbean was the Dream Suite, which was abandoned, of course, when Walt Disney died, and they were going to build it right there. Lord knows how Richard Blood had to be to stay there, though. And they were going to recreate it in perfect detail as it was to be designed. In the back alleys, guests could explore shops in the Preservation Hall Jazz Lounge. And on the back end of all of this would be the 700 to 1,000 room New Orleans Square Hotel. It's unknown what happened to make this project fade in the dust, but it was very likely due to cost overruns from Epcot Center and then the turmoil of the Disney Company in 83 and 84. Eventually, the Hotel Sands Shopping District would be turned into Port Orleans, Riverside, and French Quarter. It was never any other name. Whatever name you're thinking, it was never that. Just to let you know.
Did someone sweep in and take that name?
What, Dixie Landings?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe.
Baton Rouge Theme Park. I'm sorry, yeah. That was built in 1989.
Well, that is the New Orleans Square District and hotel. What are your thoughts?
I'm less sold on this than I am the Venetian Hotel, simply really? Because a lot of the draw here is stuff that I've already seen before. But like I said before at the top of the show, Riverside is probably my favorite hotel aesthetically. So mm-hmm. to have it kind of to grapple onto that swamp kind of aesthetic and expand it to something even greater, and to add something more interesting, to add the Blue Bayou restaurant and to add the kind of the jazz quarter with some more activity than what's currently at Port Orleans. Obviously, I think that's one of the main problems with Port Orleans here. In the real world, in Walt Disney World, is that it's not very active. It's like pretty, but it's rather mm-hmm. quiet. And yeah. You would imagine that this preservation
doesn't have that bustling shopping center and stuff like that.
Exactly. And I think mm-hmm. that like when you say
initially that this would be near the Lake Buena Vista Shopping Center. How close to the Lake Buena Vista Shopping Center?
Okay, so you know where Paddlefish is.
So it's right there.
It's right there.
Then like that would probably fix a lot of the lack of activity that the current Port Orleans feels, because it's so far. Just like most of the resorts, they're quiet. They're places to wind down at.
Yeah. Essentially, so, okay, you know the west side?
Yes, that's, yeah.
Okay, so, and you know the landing right now used to be Pleasure Island. Okay, pretty much imagine if instead of Pleasure Island or the landing or whatever and the west side, it was this. That's exactly what it is.
Mm. Yeah. No, this, I mean, that seems like, I mean, I don't know. It's not like the Pleasure Island land is really doing anything right now. So,
mm-hmm. Oh,
like,
everybody loves the Edison and Jacques Lindsay's.
Every time I pass, well, I love Jacques Lindsay's, actually. I will go to bat for Jacques Lindsay's.
And even Stick, though Stick is there, too. Stick.
STK. My God. I was like, what the fuck? No, I think that every time I pass by the Edison, I'm like, I really do not ever want to go in there. I just don't have any interest. Just truly completely
back. The Adventures Club.
It's the Adventures Club again. It's steampunk. Yeah. My steampunk GF works there. But I think that as a concept, like if basically if you pitch this to like my father, he would do a backflip. I think if you pitch this to a lot of Disneyland fans, they'd be really excited. I'm curious about the facade for the Haunted Mansion, seemingly not having. So it's,
I think it would be more like a restaurant. It's the restaurant, but it would kind of be like kind of a sly nod.
So like, have kind of you like been to Saratoga Springs?
No, but I've seen photos.
So it's Saratoga similar. Springs, it's similar insofar. Saratoga Springs is entirely themed after horses, right? And
used to be the Disney Institute, yeah.
And didn't?
Yes, it did. Yeah, that's what they built it out of.
Well, the one, it's very swampy, Saratoga Springs. It's very big, and it's a light walk away from Disney Springs currently. And when I say light walk, I mean like super fucking far, but they say it's a walk. Mm-hmm. The one thing that I am a little worried about with this compared to even the Venetian Hotel is that this is sprawling. This just seems really big. Like there's a lot of stuff to walk around. And my last experience at Saratoga Springs was like, this is really nice, but it's swampy and big. Mm-hmm. Now, if this is like that close to Disney Springs, it really just kind of feels like an extension to the shopping center with hotel rooms, which is really exciting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What are your feelings here? Because it seems like my experience with Port Orleans is maybe a bit more thorough than yours. So as a Disneylander thinking about this coming to Disney World, what is your feeling?
Okay. So I have actually stayed at French Quarter. I have amazing memories from French Quarter. We actually stayed in French Quarter August of 2001. Okay.
Bold literally move. Like
a month before 9/11. And I have really good memories. You know, that's one of the, you know, last innocent times in our lives. It's the last gasp of the 90s. So I have really good memories. However, I would take this in a heartbeat. I love New Orleans Square, and to have it in Walt Disney World would be amazing. Go to the Blue Bayou. It would be gorgeous. You know, you have like this such a dynamic atmosphere. So much better. I love this more than Disney Springs is currently, and I think it would stay around because what's that I hear? Bada bada da 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 dun down in New Orleans. Oh, it's the Jesus. Princess and the Frog. It's Dr. John and Mama Odie and the Facilier and Tiana and Prince Naveen and Louis the alligator and all the critters that they just created for Tiana's Bayou Adventure. They're coming down the pike and they're joining us at New Orleans Square in Walt Disney World. And we're having just a joyous time. Dig a little deeper and we're having fun. We're going to the garden restaurant that looks kind of like the Haunted Mansion. It's cool. I think
the Dr. Facilier restaurant.
Yes. You get to eat your vittles from the other side.
You know? I was actually in favor of this hotel for a bit. I was like, you know, imagine they built an entire New Orleans expansion to Disney Springs. Think about how that would have
Palace. What am I talking about?
Yeah.
probably Tiana's Haunted Palace, because it's got to be the Haunted Mansion. You don't think that they would convert that to a Haunted Mansion restaurant or something?
Maybe. I don't know. Who knows? Well,
I was like, oh, I'm really interested in this idea, because imagine how it would change, fundamentally change the aesthetics of Disney Springs in the current day. Without the expansion into Pleasure Island, it might even stay like closer to its Lake Buena Vista days for a lot longer, because there would be a lot less that you could really do if half of what we currently know as Disney Springs is a hotel, a swampy hotel that has to stay, you know, rather big and with trees, and it's all based on New Orleans. However, unfortunately, now that you've pointed out to me that it would clearly just become one giant Princess and the Frog thing, I'm a bit less interested.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you know what? Maybe it'll be themed a little to the 2003 Eddie Murphy Haunted Mansion, you know, so you have both.
you think like they would make the faint attempt to do the Eddie Murphy Haunted Mansion, have to backtrack and do the Princess and the Frog to save their ass?
Yeah.
Shit.
And then they would be like, well, we could try again with the 23 Haunted Mansion. Ah, shit, damn it, that bomb too.
I got like 10 minutes. It is. Truly. Yeah, that would be better. I think that this is one of those cases where I really like the idea. I do. And it kind of would be like the ideal version of the Port Orleans resorts. Maybe, though, my current feeling is like, maybe they should take this idea and do it over at Port Orleans. Because doing it at Lake Buena Vista would be such a sacrifice to the future for Disney Springs that I'm kind of glad that a lot of that real estate wasn't used on a massive resort.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with that. That, you know, this is very, very massive. And if you have ties to Saratoga and Westside and Pleasure Island, you might be saying, sacrilege! How dare you threaten the existence of Adventurers Club? But me, somebody who never stepped into the Adventurers Club, looks at this and my heart sings! And I love it so very much. And, the Blue Bayou! Dorman, the Blue Bayou! Come on, man! That's cool.
Can I just put my neck out there and say that the Blue Bayou has like one good thing on the menu?
Don't say the Monte Cristo.
You don't like it?
I don't really care for it.
Then what the fuck do you like there? Are we allowed to swear on this show?
Yes!
It was Jalen's show has allowed me to, to say some other to say horrible. Holy shit, look at the prices of the Blue Bayou. Sorry, I went to look at the menu to jog my memory. Yeah, I'm not sold that the Blue Bayou is a very good restaurant aside from the visuals.
The visuals. But that's all what it's about. It's about the ambiance.
But I can just go on the ride.
But you can't.
Well, not there, of course.
Disney World.
Yeah, that's isn't cool, it the same cool at another? Is it? It's Tokyo, at Tokyo or is it Paris?
It's Tokyo. It's Tokyo, and then
right.
I believe. Oh gosh, does
no Paris one have of them has a Blue Bayou, there? But it isn't connected to an attraction? I thought.
Yeah, I think so. I think
that's Paris. Right. Tokyo, I think, is connected to the attraction.
It's connected, but the Paris one is not. Yeah. They eventually got it somewhere. I think it would be cool, man. I'm sorry, but it would.
It's a neat idea, and I really like it.
New Orleans Square.
This is just one of those like cases where I think it's what we would lose. Like, obviously, it's the infinite futures, so maybe they would still build Downtown Disney just in a different direction, or maybe they would build it off of Worldwide of Sports, or I don't know, maybe somewhere else, right? That's certainly possible. But I do think that, like, there's such a loss in building an entire area themed exclusively to New Orleans Square. That would not otherwise be a problem had this been built in a different area. But this idea is great, and they should completely retrofit French Quarter into a... I don't care. At this point, if they need to use the Princess and the Frog excuse, they should. They should retrofit French Quarter something more towards this New Orleans Square resort, where it would be a lot more active. Because I really liked in... I need to look up a map for Port Orleans because I want to know exactly how close Port Orleans French Quarter is and Port Orleans Riverside. Are they?
They're fairly close. Yeah, they're fairly close.
Yeah, are they walkable from either side?
Yes,
can you walk from one to the other?
Yeah,
so that's what I always liked, the idea that Riverside was like the quiet kind of swampy area, whereas the French Quarter was a bit more active. Unfortunately, the French Quarter never really got that active kind of part of it.
Well,
it's still quiet.
I mean, you know, hell, as much as I would love to see this, if they ported it over to Orleans Riverside, you know what I have to say about that? Yeah, that's right. Oh yeah, let's do it.
You gonna sing along?
Want to get some good Cajun? Oh yeah. Ah, there he is. Imagine we're walking in and you're playing right. This. That's what we're doing.
Everyone, if you want to unsubscribe now, I completely understand.
Okay, let's go on to our final segment, Build It or Not. Me, build the New Orleans Square, build the Grand Venetian, and to the others. What about you?
Play the drum roll. I think that the Persian one, the Asian one, and the Mediterranean one. The Mediterranean one is the clear standout, but I'm not really sold on any of them. They don't really do anything quite unique, and the clear draw is to bring people to another part of the world. I think you can both bring people to another part of the world and do something structurally unique. And I don't think the three of those do that. The Venetian one definitely does do that, and it's a beautiful hotel. It's a damn shame that Disney never committed to it. Spending a little bit of time even at the MiraCosta Resort and imagining that expanded so much more broadly to a resort on Seven Seas Lagoon is literally a dream come true. That is a definite build it. However, I don't know if I share your same enthusiasm for the Port Orleans or the New Orleans one. I think that it's an incredible design, but I think it would be better.
Sorry. Dr. John, I'm a racist, so compelled. I'm a racist
for not supporting it. Well, that's the thing is yeah, my racism is showing anything about New Orleans and Princess and the Frog, I hate. You know what would happen is they would bomb it. The Splash Mountain people would bomb it. What'd you say? Oh, Prayer Oswald. I love that. I do. I have a lot of love for the people who, the guy who peed on Splash Mountain. I love that. Well, this is a type of guy that will not exist in T-minus 1 year. I think that maybe I'm on the maybe build the New Orleans one. I'm worried about what would happen to the future of Disney Springs. But I do really like the design. In a perfect world, we could kind of lift that up and throw it over where Port Orleans and Riverside are and maybe expand those into a more active resort space. The problem with that, of course, as many people will likely respond or won't because they don't know what they're talking about, is that you can't really build a shopping center resort away from one of the parks or away from a hotspot area. The Borderlands, the boardwalk really only works because it's a secondary entrance to Epcot, and like the limited shops that they have draw people in because they're related. They're near a theme park. You couldn't do the same thing at the Animal Kingdom Lodge, right? The minute you put a 10-minute bus ride to nowhere, you really lose a lot of that draw. And maybe that's what the Port Orleans would lack, that having it near Disney Springs would have.
Yeah.
However,
right. That's true. No, that's a great point.
Yeah. It's like it's a perfect location. If you wanted to turn an area of the nightlife stuff into a New Orleans jazzy shopping district with a lot of different food and maybe some, of course, Princess and the Frog opportunities nowadays, I think that would be a really neat idea. You know what? I've even convinced myself. I'm on your side. Build it.
Yeah! Woo! Yeah,
so didn't you used to put like music in these podcasts? Now you're playing it on your phone.
Well, I mean, that's what, just edit it in, you know. No, okay. Yeah. I mean,
you should edit it in as well, but like a second delay.
Right. Okay. Now that we've gotten that all settled, that's going to do it for us for today. Really quickly, I'd like to dedicate this podcast to my Uncle Norm, who recently passed away, and he will be always remembered as Stormin' Norman, one of my favorite relatives who ever lived, and I will miss him and his elaborate stories. But in the meantime, please follow us on social media, on Twitter at UnbuiltPod. You can reach me at OpenMothersMail and Ryan Dorman at OpenTheDorman. Feel free to email us at UnbuiltPod and rate us wherever you find this podcast. Please write a review and tell us how we're doing. And if you don't like us, thank you for listening to Where We Parked. I'm Kevin Perjurer. See you guys. Yeah. Woo.
Yeah.